Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is the audio version of the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. You can watch the video version and take part in a future episode by going to patreon.com/cultaholic. What we don't know is that the dad in this is a bee.
That same bee, and all grown up.
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready!
Oh, it's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
It's the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review! Back once again with the Ben and Game Master.
It's Christmas, Tom.
Oh!
It's Christmas!
Forgot. Ho, ho, cubed.
Yeah, that's it. There you go.
Ho, cubed. Merry Christmas from the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review.
You forget, are you fucking with it?
Do you know what?
It's Christmas, man. You gotta take that shit seriously.
Well, aren't you Mr. Humbug? Or
I'm Mr. Opposite Humbug.
Oh, you're mega Christmas man, aren't
I'm enraged
you?
That you didn't go bring the hats round from the prop room, Tom.
It's too far. It's too far.
It'll be too warm.
It will be too
thinking
warm.
Thinking about our temperatures.
See, this is the weird thing with this week's Nitro on the Classic Nitro Review. I'm Tom Campbell, WCW Kid Sam Driver.
Sorry
with me,
for just taking over the stuff.
No, that's fine. No, because you raised a very valid point that we were going to bring up early anyway, because whilst it is the 28th of April in the year of our Lord 2022 in the real world, for Nitro this week, it's December 25th, 1995. It's
that's
Christmas
right.
Night Nitro.
It's Christmas night.
Where were you Christmas night 1995?
Probably in bed. I was like four.
Oh,
so I probably already realised that school wasn't going to go too well for me. And then, just... horrible existence began at that point.
Wow, that's
yeah.
I would have been I would have probably been playing on Sonic for my Mega Drive.
Oh.
Maybe would it have been Sonic at that? Because we'll get to some of the toys in a minute for this year.
I'm so happy you
These
in.
Damn right.
Fucking yes.
I'm pretty sure, was this the year? I don't know if we had a PlayStation at this point. Maybe this was,
PlayStation came out 95, didn't it?
I think this was the year.
Was it 94 initially?
94, well, either
way.
Yeah,
it was 94, wasn't it? Because Saturn was 94.
When did Parappa the Rapper come out?
I don't know if it was 95 96. For the West, though, but I have no idea.
So 95, so this might have been the year that I got Sonic 3D for the Mega Drive. I might have still been clinging onto the Mega Drive.
Yeah.
Sonic 3D.
I had a Master System still for the next 2 and a bit years.
Still great machine, though.
It's all great, yeah. For what they could do with it, like, fantastic.
And they were still churning out, like, their own Sonic games for the Master System.
Yeah, they were shit. There were no loops in them or anything. Like, it was like Sonic, but Mario. Like, imagine Sonic without any of the signature Sonic kind of...
I will defend that by Sonic Triple Trouble.
Yeah.
On the Game Gear, they had mastered loops, but you could tell that it was a chew-on for the system.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was... I think what they did was... In my limited knowledge of programming, and if my mate Sam Beddoes is listening from Freak Zone Games,
did
please correct me.
Did they spin the whole map?
No, so what happened was, like, basically your Sonic would run up to the loop, and if he was running at a certain speed, that would be taken out. It'd be replaced by a spinning graphic.
Oh, God.
The camera would track.
Like, it triggers a sprite animation type thing.
Kind
and then,
of.
Boom,
and then
he appears on the other side.
Gathering sort of whenever, however, when I played it, like, because you could only approach the loop at a certain speed. So I think that's how they did it
that's
in the end.
That's smart. Because I'm not shitting on those Sonic games. I loved them. Played the absolute arse out of them. Like, those are the Sonic games I can sit down and play through. But I didn't go back to the Mega Drive ones until much later. So I'm like, I'm shit at normal Sonic. I'm only good at side-scrolly Sonic.
These are the best ones.
Sonic Origins out this summer.
Ooh. Mm. Oh, is that? Yeah, shit. I think I remember seeing a load of press for that.
Genuinely, without a trace of irony, I cannot wait to pay 40 quid to play Sonic 3 again. Yeah. They've got me by the thin and curlies of Sega.
I think I'll bite on it.
Yeah, they've tied up Sonic 3.
Yeah, I'm game to buy as much Sega product as possible so long as they can keep Yakuza coming. Because I know they lost the Yakuza developer to China. But at this point, you know, Yakuza games are so cut and dry. It's just like, oh, there's a thing. Oh, God. And then you kind of get elements of every game thrown into each one. So it's pretty easy, I think, to make one without the original creator, as long as they don't just fuck it up. Just keep going, Sega.
Just keep on.
They did a Fist of the North Star version, like with just the Yakuza-style gameplay, but with a whole different cast of characters.
That's
story.
A really nice idea.
And I want them to do more of that with different franchises. They've got Japanese Yakuza games as well that just haven't been ported. There's like a zombie one. There's one set, there's a couple actually set in like classical Japanese antiquity periods. And so like there's so much there that it's just like give Sega all the money and just keep nodding and insisting that they release more Yakuza stuff.
Just sandbox games in general in wonderful worlds.
Have you played any of the Yakuza games?
I have, yes.
I
watched you playing one.
Yeah.
The more recent one, where they lean into the stupid.
Yeah. So, like Zero was more recent, but chronologically is the first. Mm. And that one is like, I think that's my favorite one, story-wise. But it's, just the fact that you can be playing a game and they go, oh, I'm bored now. I don't really want to do any more missions. Do a couple of side quests that are all ridiculous. And then it's like, I'm bored of this now. I'm going to go bowling, or I'm going to go to the batting cages, or I'm going to go to the claw machine.
That's not my love for like the Grand Theft Auto style games, where it's just like, don't do missions.
It's
just
like
play it.
In Yakuza, even when you get bored of the game, you don't need to turn the game off. You can just go to the arcade in the game and play Space Harrier for an hour. Like,
I don't know whether your good lady is a gamer as well.
Mm-hmm.
Alex is. Alex has a sandbox game and she will play it like through the missions, get everything done in order, clear an area. She hates watching me because I can't be arsed. I get proper ADHD about it and I'm just like, I'll play a mission. I might start a mission. I'll just go, actually, no, I'm just going to see whether this horse can outrun this train.
I can
Red Dead Redemption 2.
From time to time.
Spoiler,
like Steph's big into Zelda and like open world explorer games, Skyrim and Elden Ring and everything. I'm into those too, but like my first playthrough of Skyrim, I kind of got a bit, well, I'll come back to the sandbox shit. Just give me the story now. Because I think I was pushed for time. So I just kind of crammed my way through Skyrim. I've got Elden Ring. I've got two fucking copies of Elden Ring. And I'm like sat, you know, like everybody's like, it's amazing. I'm having so much fun. And every time I sit down to play it, I'm just fucked. So I'm just like, I'll play like 25 minutes, a half hour. And I'm, you know, I can't be arsed with this.
I'm just tired.
And then every single day it sits there, like over the weekend, if I'm just sat at home. And I'm like looking at it going, I should be playing you, but I'm just not in the mood, man. So I'm just kind of sad. But yeah, I get very, as you can tell, the asides already, I get very distracted in games. And very quickly Just Cause is one of my favorite series simply because it's like, oh, I'm bored of this now. Let's strap a load of bombs and rockets to this and see what happens. And then just jump on top of it and try and ride a freight container over like a small tropical island. It's great.
Nah, see, that's it. You're like me when you play them then. It's just like, it's more fun just to see how far can I push this world?
Yeah.
How far does this really go?
Occasionally though, like a game like Disco Elysium will come along and it'll just take over my life. Like completely take over my life for like 5 months.
Like hyperfixate on it.
I'll not play anything else. I'm like that with a lot of things in life. Which I don't know if it's indicative of something. But I'm like, when I get into something, I get really into it as like a hobby or as like a game or a film, and I'll just sit and rewatch and analyze and replay. And yeah, I'm a
hyperfixator.
Quite obsessive over things, like I get fixated on stuff. And then one morning I'll wake up and I go, and it'll be something new.
I'm like
that candle making or baking or I don't know.
You just throw yourself into that all over again and the cycle resumes.
Yeah, and then you're left with a load of shit. Especially when it's a hobby, you're left with a load of shit that you're like, I'm not going to do this ever again. I've spent 200 quid on all this resin.
Is there like resin sat in your house? Just like, my father.
Thankfully not. Resin's the next on the list, Tom. Resin's the next hobby. I know where it's going, but resin's the next hobby.
Alex bought me a massive robot in 2015.
Okay, elaborate. I like robots.
It was like a beep boop boy? Like a Meccano style robot to put together. Oh. I never finished it. And I ended up giving it to charity because I never finished it.
My cousin.
Broke my heart.
My cousin loved Meccano, and he loved, which again was a huge 90s thing, was Lego Technics.
Oh, yeah.
And I just couldn't get away with them. I preferred like the simple blocks and stuff. And I think I got one Meccano set, and having to sit there with an actual spanner and like wrench and put it all together and everything. I think I was just like, like I don't want to have to use tools. I just want to clip stuff together. You'd get a Technic kit and it's like, why is there 58 different bits? Why is there Kinex bits in it? It's Lego. And
With the robot.
Too complex for me.
Nothing made me sad. I had to give it to charity in the end because I had to find it a good home because I got the body done and the arms done.
Yeah.
I just got a bit tired of doing it. And I put him in the cupboard, and every time I went to get the broom out of the cupboard, he was just sat there. And I was just like, I can't. This is hurting my heart.
Yeah.
Like Alex would say, I'd open the cupboard and Alex in the other room would go, Father, give me legs. Shop!
I have a Gundam sat right now like that with no legs, but I'm in the middle of a house move. So I was like bored and I was like, I've got that Gunpla kit Steph got me. So I start building the Gunpla. There's shit everywhere. It's all over the fucking table. And I'm just like sat there. And my brain, after about 4 hours, again, hyperfixation, my brain after like 4 hours, just, what the fuck are you doing? You're moving house. Like, why is the shit everywhere? Put it away. So I'm putting this little Gunpla back. But I would, if you didn't really gel with the Meccano thing, I'd say straight up try one of the Bandai hobby kits because you can get them for all sorts of stuff now, not just Gundam. But they snap together. They're kind of Warhammer-y. But it's very satisfying when it all like clicks into place and it's like, I just gave him his little pupils.
I ended up doing Sonic the Hedgehog Lego instead.
Oh, yes.
Got Sonic the Hedgehog Lego and I built that.
Shit's all over Mario Lego.
Actually, it doesn't.
Sonic's eyes don't power off. Have you seen Mario getting turned off? That's only turned on. When you get the little Lego Mario that costs like 60 quid?
Yeah.
That literally, you just pick it up and it goes bloop, 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 or whatever the fuck. And you bang it and it makes the coin noise. When you turn that off, it's just like sat there with its eyes because it's got little screens for eyes. And I think it's got a little screen on its stomach. And it's just like kind of blinking still and looking around and then just eternal black.
Oh,
and his life just disappears from it.
That makes me very uneasy. Very uneasy. Yeah. What doesn't is Nitro in 1995.
Oh, especially Christmas Nitro. Christmas Nitro. So, you know, you can't have a bad night. Santa's coming.
Santa's coming to town, everybody. Good luck. Santa's coming. Look busy. It's the last Nitro before Starcade, which is next week. So we've got to do a watch along of Starcade next week.
And Lord and Savior, Protector of the World,
Jesus Starcade,
Hulk Hogan is not in attendance tonight as he's still very much under Jesus. Who?
Never heard of him.
Is he still? Is he still very much suspended?
Yes. Or is he delivering presents to the kids because he's secretly Santa?
That too.
I will let you Santa decide.
Santa with muscles.
Scanter with muscles. So this week, December 25th, 1995. So a little bit about the wider world before we get into the rigors of the wrestling news this week. US box office number one, Waiting to Exhale.
By? So
this was the Whitney Houston movie by Forrest Whitaker. Adapted from the 1992 novel, Waiting to Exhale. It centers around four women living in Phoenix, Arizona, and their relationships with men and one another. All of them are, in speech marks, holding their breath until the day they can feel comfortable in a committed relationship with a man. Like a chick flick starring Whitney Houston that was number one. And the soundtrack was
Forrest Whitaker made it.
He directed it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, Big Forrest directing that. Yeah, there you go.
Angela Bassett
was in it as well. She's very good. In the UK, number one in the box office is Babe. Babe beats Bond.
Is Pig in the City the first one?
No, Pig in the City is a sequel. This is the first one with the voice of Chucky Finster as Babe.
Was it Chucky? Fuck.
Funny enough, because time is a construct of human perception, I recorded the classic Raw review with Jatkins just before the classic Nitro review with Sam, where he told me that one won't go out till Monday. This goes out the day after.
Thanks, future Jatkins.
future Jatkins told Pastor Tom that time is the construct of human perception. US Billboard number one, still Mariah Carey, One Sweet Day. UK charts.
End the suffering. Jesus Christ.
We're nearly there. We're nearly done. Michael Jackson, Earth Song is your Christmas number one.
Fucking hell.
Still.
It's been weeks. I know. It was a big deal. And the video's fucking absolutely baller. But... Mm.
Charts that moved that much in the 90s.
No, I mean, the thing is, like, the charts are utterly kind of a easily rigged these days, aren't they, with the rise of... Yeah, I sound like a fucking old man, don't I? With the rise of, like, reality talent competition shows and the way that they are scheduled throughout the year guarantees that the Christmas number one, which used to be a very big deal, even as far back as our childhoods, the Christmas number one was always like a, who's going to be number one for Christmas?
It felt like a big deal, didn't it?
It very quickly became, here's the new star, here's the new star. And it's, I feel like nobody particularly cares about the charts anymore because it's just not as big a deal to buy music, which is a shame. But at the same time, like, we're moving toward a more American system, aren't we, where there's like 40 different charts. So the UK top chart is still the big one here, but ultimately it's like, yeah, but you're never going to see like Smashing Pumpkins there unless they sell shitloads.
Yeah, that's it. So, unless they punch through the mainstream.
Yeah.
Which they doubt they will.
No, I think they're going to have a hard time with Melancholy too.
This is not melancholy in the slightest. The top five must-have Christmas toys of 1995.
Oh. Here we go.
At number five.
Can I make a guess?
Oh, yeah, of course. I tell you what, shout out a couple and I'll tell you whether they make the
list. Well, I think you were going to go with that first one. Was it Big Big Loader?
No.
No, okay, right.
Big Big Loader does not make the top five.
Maybe it was a few years later. Yeah, my brother got that for Christmas, so it'll be a few years later. Mr. Frosty?
No.
Super Soakers?
No, not in the top
five. Fuck me. Power Rangers toys?
No, not in the top five.
In 95?
Not in 95. Maybe later on, but not in 95.
I thought it was like in its swing in 95. Fuck, He-Man?
Not even He-Man. He-Man's very old at this
point. Yeah, He-Man's well old at this point. Fuck me. I'm going to feel like a complete idiot, aren't
I? Well, one we've kind of already talked about.
Okay. Just hit me with them. Put us out of our misery.
Number five, Baby All Gone.
Baby All Gone.
So this was the baby doll where you'd give it
plastic food thing and it would go in and then it would like eat it.
And then it would shit itself a little while. Yeah,
okay, nice.
Baby All Gone. Number five.
Do they, like, is it just going into like the empty chasm that is the plastic molded body of the baby? Or is there's got to be a tube running through
that
shit.
I think it's just like a tube that runs
I was going to say, because that's just like grubby. There's got to be so much bacteria inside that fucking thing anyway.
And also the baby must have no stomach acid because it comes out the other end and it's exactly as it was when it went in.
So you just put it back through. Perpetual food. We should give it a try, Tom.
So when the world ends, we're sorted.
When the world ends, we can survive by eating our own shit. All this and more on the Cultaholic Classic Nitro review.
Stay for the Nitro. You come for the Nitro, you stay for the eating shit.
You come for the fucking Nitro. We spent the first, half hour here talking about everything but Nitro.
Number four on our top five of the must-have Christmas toys of 95, Skydancers.
Oh, fuck, Skydancers, they're the spinny boys, right? Yeah. They did a male version of those later, but they weren't as popular. I remember I had a mate who had one. I think they were Beast
Dragonflies.
Boys.
Yeah, Flight is might.
Yes. So, yeah, they were... I forgot about that until I was watching... have you ever seen with Trixie and Katia?
No.
They, at one point, they're talking about classic toys and they're presented with a Skydancer. Katia doesn't know what the fuck they are, and it's hilarious. It's just the absolute sheer joy on the face of somebody that's never seen one, as it just goes like, "What?" It's class.
They are class. Number three, Beanie Babies.
Beanie Babies in 95.
Yeah, they were massive in 95. Beanie Babies.
Really? I always thought they were much later than that, like toward 98. Tamagotchi's got to be later, right?
Tamagotchi's in a couple of years' time.
Is Action Man on the list?
No, they always, not the top five.
They always did like a big Action Man for Christmas, didn't they?
They did.
Because I got the kite one year, and I remember I fucking loved it, because he would fly, it had 100 feet of rope, so the kite would get 100 feet in the air. And then Action Man, you would put him on at the bottom, he would rappel his way up to the top, I think, and then he would jump down with his own parachute.
That's amazing.
He was plastic molded in like this position, so you couldn't do shit all else with him. But you could like airdrop your action man in.
Number two, Pogs.
Pogs. Oh my God.
Pogs were still big.
Oh. If you have Pogs at home, please send me them. I'm unironically, the address for the office is on the website. I am unironically wanting to start collecting
back
slammers. Because I used to have like ridiculous, like thick chrome, fucking oil colored, like slammers and stuff. And I love Pogs. I think they're ridiculous. I think the entire concept of them is fucking brilliant. Like, here, let's get some cheap discs of plastic. Oh, yeah, that's a lot of money. Like, it's genius.
I'm surprised to see them on the list because I know that WWF had they had their own milk caps for a while.
Yeah, so Pogs evolved out of a Playground game, I believe it was, but it was just called like milk caps.
I wonder whether I've still got in my my Google notes the episode that we did where we talked about Pogs.
Remember Pogs? I'm trying to think. Yeah, like Pogs became it was like Tannoy, right? Like the Alan Parker is like, Tannoy is actually the brand. Pogs was like the big market leading brand. And so all milk caps became Pogs over here. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of, because you remember you used to give them away in crisps. Do you remember when they give shit away in fucking crisps and cereal?
You, sir, are thinking of Tazos.
Yes, I am, but they're still fucking Pogs.
They had little things you kind of built with
they're
them.
Not official Pogs, but they clipped together.
Clippy bits on them.
And you could make like little sculptures with them and stuff.
Would you like the history of Pogs?
Yes.
Excellent, because we did this on.
I've watched this week's Nitro. These people at home probably done the same. They know nothing really big happens.
If
it's great.
If there's a big issue, that's what the fast forward button's for. I'm just saying. Like Stevie Wonder, that's what friends are for. That's what the fast forward button's for. Now, milk caps possibly originated in Maui during the 20s.
Nice.
Some say it goes back to the late 17th century as Menko, which is a Japanese card game, which is similar to milk caps.
Okay.
With cards. After new packaging made cardboard milk caps obsolete in the 50s, manufacturers such as Hale Kala Dairy and Orchards Hawaii occasionally distributed caps as promotional items. When Hale Kala used the caps to successfully promote the 1971 introduction of their fruit drink, Passion Orange Guava, it led to a surge in similar promotions and milk cap collecting. Orange Guava, what could they initial that to? Passion Orange Guana?
To Pogs.
Pog!
To Pog.
Dun, dun, dun.
Incredible. I just think there was a simpler, happier time.
It was a simpler time.
Do you think
time.
They used to package them in? I'm sure somebody out there probably knows. Do you reckon somebody that they used to package in, like Snapple? You drank Snapple, right?
I had some Snapple.
Yeah, you know how Snapple has the fact?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you reckon fact. They just stick the little I'm saying Pog, but it's just how we call
it. Yeah, they did. They were decorative, weren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so they'd stick them like under the milk cap. Therefore, there'd be a Pokemon element. You wouldn't know what you were getting because you can't exactly look into a carton of milk, can you?
No.
Do you reckon it led to a spate of people unscrewing the tops of milk?
Almost definitely.
Do you reckon that's why we have that little peel-off thing on the milk now?
Ooh, so even when you're being a little thief. It
100% isn't, but we're going to do a whole... We're doing a whole thing.
Conspiracy theories with Sam Driver. Conspiracy theories with Sam Driver. So that's Pogs at number two. Number
Pogs
one.
Pogs actually helped facilitate the move of Lex Luger.
Pogs and the cartel. A 7-hour Sam Driver lecture. Number one was the Sony PlayStation.
Of course.
Biggest toy of 1995 was the PlayStation, which was retailing then at £537.28, which roughly is about 287 quid in today money.
Wait, is that not the other way around?
Other way around, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say.
meant the other way around.
It's like we complain a lot about consoles and the prices of consoles, and they are getting out of hand, but, you know, when you adjust shit for inflation, isn't... what is it? There's one console in particular. It might be the Saturn or it might be something else where adjusted for inflation, it's like 700 quid. And it's like, fucking hell. And it's just... God, I miss polygons.
We all miss
polygons. I miss
polygons.
Every game you'd pick up at the shop being all right.
I remember with the PlayStation, it came with a demo disc.
Demo one, yeah.
Demo one. And there was one...
It had the fucking... it had two, but what do you call it? Like a technical showcase demo of Dinosaur and
of
Manta.
A T-Rex, yeah.
Yeah, and the T-Rex is actually what sold games designers on the power of the PlayStation, because a lot of people were like, oh, discs are expensive as fuck. And they were like, look, what are you doing?
It was just this one clip of the dinosaur walking forward, but then you could press the buttons to make him move left and right.
And his mouth open, and you could rotate the whole thing around, and you could see everything. And at the time, I remember that was fucking groundbreaking.
Felt like the future, didn't
it? And then Manta was similar, I think, but you couldn't really control much. You could kind of make it move like this, I think. But it was like, yeah,
T-Rex was the best one.
And do you remember getting demos with Neturoze games on them?
Oh my God! I found
most of my demos.
Ah!
Still in case. So I know what the Neturoze games are.
They're
so
amazing.
If you want them, feel free.
I've got PS4. Can I play them on there?
No, but you can play them on a PC or a laptop.
Can you?
Just get an emulator and that you own the disc, so legally.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I really wanted a Neturoze PlayStation. That felt like the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah. Making games. The fact you could get a black PlayStation was cool. And then the fact, you could make games on it was even cooler.
I'd like to.
No matter how poo the games were.
Yeah, most of them were shite.
There was a football one that was great, though. It was like a top-down, old-school one.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember there was an RPG which had really bad translation.
Okay.
And I remember there was like a 3D Pac-Man called Cone Man. And every time he died, it was
just a giant VLC logo, just stalking the halls of this office place.
And every time
he... beating everybody down that was using Windows...
Get off there, you bastards!
Or real player at the time.
But the weird thing is, my brain tells me that the one thing I remember about that is every time he died, he went back to the start, but then the little sound effects played that went hoo, hoo, hoo. Like every time he died, it was like a little sad saxophone. That's what my brain remembers of Neturoze. Cad Icarus is a great video on the Neturoze games.
Yeah.
Really good. Check out Cad Icarus. We like Cad Icarus. So that's some of the real world news, the boring matter of the wrestling news. I know.
Oh, we've got to start getting into the wrestling quick.
That's fine. Another hour, yeah.
I imagine everybody's just like, click.
Are you kidding? It's now they click. When we have to talk about wrestling. Anyway, last week's Raw did 2.3. Last week's Nitro did 2.7. Bang. Big win for Nitro.
Long may they reign.
Observer this week says, Eric Bischoff really rubbed in the rating success, talking about how Nitro proved the critics wrong, and said how top stars the WWF are leaving in droves for WCW. Stephen Michael on commentary for Christmas called WWF the Lesser League. And when the subject of what Medusa did came up, Mike Michael said that she shouldn't have thrown the belt in the garbage can because the belt is more fitting for being thrown in the kitty litter. Oh! Ooh. Bah, 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 bah. Shots fired.
I like that Bischoff at about three times through the night just keeps going, and like that time where he has a pre-written line, or like last week when Medusa showed up and it's not only where the big boys play, it's where the big girls play as well. He reads it like line for line.
Oh, absolutely. Dave Meltzer does a little look ahead to the new year for WCW, and he says WCW has the money on its side going into 1996, and it has the wrestling talent on its side and has the television exposure on its side. It doesn't appear that is the case with WCW in a war of attrition, which this wrestling war appears to be. WCW has a very huge tactical advantage. So he kind of thinks that if WCW, whilst he doesn't believe they're making the right booking decisions, and I'm kind of with him because I'm, you know, on merely a fan level, I think WWF have a clearer focus than what WCW.
I mean, look, the wrestling industry at this point is not doing great.
It's not a good time.
It's on the outs. Mm. It's slowly crawling its way back in. But at the same time, like, you know, we think back to it and it's like, oh yeah, but it built up back into 1996. It doesn't.
Mm.
It's pretty fucking flat. And, you know, like Hogan and Savage and, you know, it's you had Luger jumping.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's just the same old faces. And while people are going to cheer them, it's... not enough for a mainstream audience to be fully engaged with it anymore. Hulk Hogan's passé. He had his day 10 years ago and Now it's time to move on. It's the 90s, as everybody used to say.
WCW has expressed interest in the Rock and Roll Express coming in.
No surprise there.
Yeah.
NWA Legends still going now. Can't imagine how good they were in 95.
I imagine, hey, I mean, like Ricky Morton still doing flipping Tope Suiciders. Yeah.
And with the fury of Ted Turner at your side, you know, you've got all the money in the world to throw at whoever you want, including, who was it they were going to try and bring in? The Bushwhackers.
The Bushwhackers, yeah. They end up finding out, no, you're still under contract with them. No. Talk about working with unusual people. An official from K1 was at the UFC show with Sonny Ono.
Yep.
WCW apparently planning to do a live pay-per-view show from Japan in 1996. This was announced possibly in partnership with K1. Dave Meltzer says, there's no way that can financially make out, but I guess K1 is willing to foot the bill and take the loss because of the belief it gives the organization prestige to be on an American pay-per-view. K1 and WCW. It's a real sort of like, because K1's got a bit more of a
K1's shooty. Still sort of the underdog, but it's like, yeah, I think in terms of a global perspective, maybe, you know, rubbing shoulders with a company like WCW that may be about to explode, which, you know, it does eventually. Then it's a pretty smart move, but at the same time, if nobody over there really knows your talent, nobody over there really cares, then it's a bit of an uphill battle because while you can put on a wrestling show and you hear people from WWE with podcasts now from back in the day, they'll talk about it all the time, like the Super Bowl of Sports relationship. And it's like, whenever it's like, why don't you show more Japanese style wrestling and stuff? Why do you do this when you go to Japan? Why don't you feature more Japanese talent? Why don't you work in collaboration with other companies? And it's like, by whatever point, you know, Japanese fans had latched on to WWF, and they liked the presentation of the style and they knew the characters, not like droves of them, but there was a contingent big enough that just wanted to see, for some reason, American style pro wrestling and were willing to go and cheer for it. But I don't know if the sentiment's that strong yet, and especially with WCW.
I mean, there will be, as you say, but
yeah,
maybe not quite now. Otherwise, a quiet week on the wrestling front because it is, of course, Christmas. Everybody has gone home.
Get
for a
to work,
sleep.
You lazy bastards.
Well, they're not even.
Hey, Vince made it happen. What, 2 years ago?
Yeah, we had
absolutely monstrous behavior. Fucking, I know Americans like the way it's seen over here is that Americans appreciate Thanksgiving more than Christmas, and that's like their biggest holiday of the year. Mm. But like, fucking Christmas Day, Vince. Come
you
on.
Make them work Christmas Day.
Like, oh, we'll do a house show. Great.
Thanks, Vince.
I couldn't imagine ever wanting to leave my fucking house on Christmas Day to go to an event. Nah.
How many people do you reckon lived in the vicinity of that WWE show on Christmas Day, had their dinner, and just went, oh, do you know what? I can't be arsed. I would be like that.
How many people lived just near it and were just looking down the street at all the people queuing up for hours on Christmas Day? You should be drunk and at home, or sober and at home and chilling full of food.
It is true. It is true. We shouldn't be at events on Christmas Day.
WCW
aren't, though. So to let you behind the curtain.
No, they are. We're not going to give them the pass, Tom.
We have to show them how the sausage is made. That's part of the part of the remit of this sausage podcast.
Where it gets hidden?
This episode of Nitro was recorded before last week's episode of Nitro. So, yeah. I mean, that's why, I mean, like, you can get away with a lot of stuff they do canonically, because there's nothing that really leans heavily on what happened last week, other than stuff they talk about on comms.
Yeah, and commentary's not going to be heard by everybody in the arena, because this isn't WWA.
Oh. So. They did that, didn't they?
I was surprised that it hadn't been done more recently and well. But at the same time, like, the nature of live production, you don't want to throw live commentary to an arena on top of that.
No, because also the wrestlers are trying to crack on.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to do live commentary to an arena, imagine being
a WWA commentator and there's somebody in the ring who you think is the shit. And you can just stand there, like at the NWO sold out pay-per-view where it's like, that sucks.
Oh.
And it keeps coming over the thing. Whenever you could just bury everybody alike to their faces. And just sit there going, I'm just doing my job.
And also,
he's shit. I'm just. Look at that fucking loose ass leg lock. Fucking shit.
Hey, put your.
Ozzy's just going wild.
It's so. As a wrestling fan, I don't know whether. I mean, obviously, you watch wrestling on TV. So when you go to an arena show and there's no commentary, it's probably a bit like, oh, I'm used to hearing a voice here.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you know,
I prefer it, man. I prefer going to a live wrestling event to like watch it unfold these days, because commentary is just very mechanical.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have to have a very different approach to commentary if you were going to insist on doing it live over the tannoy. You'd have to do it very, very differently to how a WWE show would do
just it. Pre-record Vince, get a soundboard.
I think you just need
what about Uber?
Pretty much you just have what if it me, you just have one guy on commentary and they would just probably talk every 10 seconds.
Look, let's just replace.
Just go, that's a big slam.
Let's just agree to get a formal petition together for WWE to just do away with commentary, replace it with somebody who can control the anonymous GM laptop, except now it's just anonymous commentary booth. And it's just a soundboard of like rave horns. So somebody hits a good move, there's no commentary anymore, it just goes meh, 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 meh. And things like that.
You're talking a big game there. You do realize, like, the day this goes out in a few hours' time, we are backstage at WWE Newcastle. You do realise that, don't you? You do realise I could ask you to put your money where your mouth is.
No, I was simply asking for a petition. That's all I was asking
for. I reckon we could get past the security.
Let's get over there. I'll bring an aux cable. You find the XLR to aux. What we'll do is we'll... Because there's no commentary there anyway.
I think XLR to aux is a team on NXT.
If we set up a table... They'll just think commentary are going to be there. It's fucking genius.
We'll just set up and just sit there.
Right, we just need to make ourselves look like commentary.
Yeah.
And then, I'll just sit there every time there's like a power bomb. Be like, me, 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 me.
Some of the, it's all confidence. If we go there like we're meant to be there.
Yeah.
We'll be fine.
That's it. You know, that, yeah.
Can't wait to get banned from the utility later. So excited. It's Christmas night in the world of the WCW.
Yes, it is. Finally, we start the show.
We are still where we were last week in Augusta, Georgia.
Yes.
Eric Bischoff is in an ugly sweater. Heenan is in a festive hat. And Mongo has Pepe dressed as Santa. It's adorable.
It's
but
lovely.
Like you say, like there's
12 out of 10 Pepes.
But like you say, it's almost like they almost forgot a few of the accoutrements for Christmas.
It's so
not as overbearing.
There's like a very subdued welcome to Christmas Nitro because you know you've got some Christmas flavor going on. You've got Pepe, you've got Bobby, but nothing else outside of the Merry Christmas welcome until about three quarters of the way through the show when all of a sudden everybody's wearing Santa hats and there's fucking candy canes sellotape to the logo and it's like somebody quickly ran back from the dollar store just like get it on.
I like it when they double down on a Christmas wrestling show, when you've got like the Miracle on 34th Street fight.
Yeah,
I think
the
you
tree,
have to.
The presents, and the presents are all weapons. Like, just shit like that.
Because, let's be honest, no one's watching on Christmas Day.
No.
So just have fun.
Yeah, just be ridiculous. Just be absolutely...
Just
like, it's,
be
again, part of the reason I love house shows, because they get so out of hand and ridiculous.
They have a fun.
It's a completely different feel.
It really does feel different. Straight to the ring, though. What a Christmas treat this is. It's Lex Luger versus Scotty Riggs. Did you ask for the American Males theme for Christmas?
Well, we're not fucking getting it.
Fuck you, you're not getting it.
Instead, we get the Christmas package. and Scotty's in the ring. And Scotty, Scotty doesn't get a mention until like halfway through the match. Like, I don't even think they introduce him as Scotty Riggs. I'm sure that it just goes straight into the match. And then they just spend the entire time talking about Luger and Starrcade. And I was just sat there going, Scotty? Scotty? Scotty?
Scotty?
Scotty?
Any chance?
Scotty? And eventually they start burying Scotty as not being as good as Luger. And then it's like, is it kind of deliberate to make him look like the underdog? I don't know.
But here's the thing, right? Ignoring the commentary, Riggs gets like some nifty drop kicks.
He does.
And a fair bit of offense on Luger. And it kind of plays in the fact that last week we had Luger versus Bagwell.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really lean into that observation too much on comms, which is a shame. Like Luger's fighting the American males, the American males. But Riggs gets some nice stuff in. He gets an arm whipped to the outside, which looks quite nice.
Yeah.
Fairly uninteresting match apart from that. But the crowd seem to come alive whenever Riggs is in charge.
The crowd were incredible. We've got Hogan on the front row again on the opposite side. And on hard cam side, you know that WCW have gone all out in their Christmas preparations because we have the Christmas bee.
We do have a Christmas bee.
Somebody turned up in the fucking Honey Nut Cheerios bee outfit. I don't.
I was frantically like pausing this to try and figure out what the fuck because
I swear they weren't there last week.
No, they're new. That's new. Yeah. So as Riggs gets knocked to the outside, the hard cam pulls back. And then you see a bee, someone in a bee costume.
Yeah.
Center of the ringside area. And what's funny is he stands up and starts giving out to Riggs.
Yeah.
And you're shit, mate. The bee's having a go.
But it's just odd. Like, do you think that... But obviously it's going to be hot in the whole helmet and everything. So it'd be understandable why we maybe didn't see it in next week's episode. Because... Sorry, in last week's episode, because last week's episode was taped after this. So maybe when he was like jumping up and down and shit, he was blocking the hard cam or something and they were like, take it off. Or maybe he just got overheated and was like, ugh. And then we didn't notice that the rest of him was a giant bee last week.
Do you reckon like you just...
It was just a headless giant bee.
I think I feel like it might be a charity bee. There was something written on his back I couldn't quite make out. I was looking up like charities based in Augusta, Georgia that had a mascot that was a bee. I couldn't find it. Maybe he's done a fun run that day and he's just come dressed as a bee.
It's
I couldn't
festive, find a team. He's the Christmas bee.
The festive bee. You know what? As we all do, we all suckle from the Christmas bee.
The Christmas bee, for some reason, didn't die when the weather changed. And now he's just out alone in the fields, Tom.
Oh, my God.
And he's looking for pollen.
Why are you making Christmas dark?
There's no pollen, Tom. How's he going to get by?
Christ.
His hive is empty. Everybody's gone. He's exhausted all of the food that was left for him. His wife's not there. His kids, they've all gone. So he's just out there and a blizzard's happened, right? And the wind knocks over his bee house. What are they called? Hive. It knocks over his beehive that he used to live in with all of his civilization.
Think of the bedlam.
And he ends up just out in the cold breeze, right? And it starts to blizzard. And it's like, oh, no. And then he accidentally bumps into a door. And somebody hears it. And then they pick him up and they bring him inside for Christmas, where they've got traditional Christmas dish, pollen, sugar water, and a roaring fire.
That's lovely. I like how you started off as Tim Burton and ended it as Walt Disney.
Yeah. And all his family are there. Or at least that's what he thinks, as slowly the cup is just placed over him.
Oh no! You made Tim Burton again. I thought you were going to say it was or I thought you were going to say he died in the cold.
No,
so this is him going to heaven.
It was all a delusion. He doesn't get put under a glass. The only glass he gets put under is the sugar water one when he's like proper drinking out of it. He's a G. Is the Christmas bee? Don't worry about the Christmas bee, everyone.
That was a journey, that was. That was a journey.
You know?
Christmas bee aside.
You can tell we've not recorded one of these for a couple of weeks.
It's bloody great, mate. It's gold. All gold. Fraser, edit none of this out. It's all gold. Riggs gets a two count off an inside cradle, misses a top rope something. It's not a top rope, nothing.
Yeah.
Because he's clearly going for either a leg drop or a drop kick.
Yeah,
it's
a bit of a miscommunication.
Yeah, it's a malfunction at the junction. Luger swats him away. This leads to a power slam and a Irish whip and a torture rack. The turkey rack as it is from now
on. It's Christmas.
For the win. Luger puts the boots to Riggs to send him out of the ring and flexes to celebrate. Scotty Riggs in 2022 looks great, by the way. He's in phenomenal shape.
He looks he looks a lot younger than he is. I'm quite surprised at his age there.
He's looking great, yeah. Riggs.
Luger after the win, of course, gets straight in there. It is Christmas, throwing presents out to the crowd. Did he catch that? He's too strong for his own good, though, so he's picking up these presents and he doesn't realise that they're just sharpened blocks of steel. And 12 people died.
Fucking hell. Sam's preparing the saddest Christmas.
R.I.P. in peace.
This is the sad Christmas.
Oh my God, I'm going to get some action films.
Sometimes, kids, you don't get what you want. Sometimes you die. Mean Gene on the ramp.
Shits himself when the pyro goes off. Luckily, the camera's positioned like chest up, like chest height medium. So he's you don't see any of the shit trickling down his leg. But you see, it just goes off and he's like, whoa!
Somebody finally put that cigarette out. Gene, fucking, I swear, right, mate. The true story, Because when we sit down to do these, I said, I'll send you a message with the episode we're up to just in case you get lost because you're doing other things. There's the episode we're on. Happy days. And I sent it and I started watching. I went, oh, no, that's last week's episode. Hang on. My apologies. That's the one we need. Might as well have been last week's episode. Yep. Fuck me. Mean Gene's first question to Sting. What's up with you and Luger?
And
Sting's reaction is how I feel.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where he's like, come on, I'm fed up with being asked about it.
It's just the fact Gene's once again on the fucking ramp. It's every single week. He's just on the ramp. But yeah, Sting
is allergic to the ring.
Sting's quite furious.
As he should be.
Yeah, he's been asked the same question 1,000 fucking times. But he essentially at one point goes, I did not. And I didn't know where it was going. It felt like it was maybe going to go have sexual relations with that woman.
I wish it would.
Or the way he says not kind of sounds like he's like, I did not hit her. It is not true. I did not hit her. I did not.
Oh, hi, Marks. He's fed up being asked about Luger, as he says.
Yeah.
I'm sick about it. I'm sick of it too. Looking ahead to Starrcade, though, Sting wants one more chance to put the Scorpion Deathlock on Ric Flair in the triangle match and never let it go. He then warns New Japan that they're in America with the best of the best, Starrcade. Lots of boxes ticked by Sting, but they're boxes that we've been ticking every fucking week.
Yeah.
With Luger, tired, man. Flair, it's Japan.
The end of the fucking show as well. We'll get there.
Oh,
the end of the show.
Christ.
You'd expect it now because they've been hammering this home for weeks. You'd expect the end of the show to be quite raucous, but not what it turns into. No. It's just like, what
we're not there yet though, my friend, because Sting is in action next against Big Bubba. Sting went to the back, came back after the break. Yeah,
let Bubba make his entrance first, which, by the way, Bubba's theme fucking slaps.
It's a good theme, actually. Yeah. It's a good theme. What do you think Sting did when he went to the back? I'd like to think that he had a chew it.
I'd like to say that he did something so unbelievable that nobody, just there was one person waiting by the curtain and he just busted out like a double backflip, or he just gently walked up to them and just started just rubbing their face like that. Just some grizzled old NWA guy. And Sting's just rubbing his face, not looking at him, like he's like petting a cat. And then he just looks at him and kind of like nods and then just walks out the curtain. Nobody will ever like believe that Sting would just touch this old guy's face.
You've twisted me with your Burton-esque Christmas fable so far, because when you said he did something unbelievable and you went, do a backflip, my brain went like, strangled a cat.
Fucking hell.
It's your fault.
That's not mine. I'm not taking any responsibility for that. Sting's got an important part to play in this advent thing.
Sting, because the bee, of course.
No, he's the Christmas scorpion. Come on, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, please regale us with the story of the Christmas scorpion.
Well, it's just Noah in it. Noah has a big boat with loads of animals.
The wrestling promotion.
Yeah. Pro Wrestling Noah has a big boat, right? With all these animals on it. And never mind it happened thousands of years before or something, or like hundreds of years before. He just rocks up now in the middle of nowhere. In just like, there's no water. He just rocks up on this big boat. And out come all the Christmas animals.
Amazing. So
there's
Christmas.
The shepherds aren't happy though. There's lions. There's all sorts of shit. Wolves.
That must have been a nightmare to look after.
Bees.
Noah's Ark.
God,
can you imagine? Jesus Christ. The admin of that.
Oh yeah. Then you're just kind of floating. Waiting for a message, floating and waiting for a message. And then one day it's like, yeah, it's all good. And you're like, so are we going to talk about any? No. Okay. Right.
And then all the chew on of like them sat all together and just like.
Oh God. Yeah. That boat must have been, they've got to have been some form of like, somebody must have had a copy of Uno.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Oh, look, do you want a copy of Uno on a tight space like a boat? When, you know, the entire world's flooded. That's just a recipe for disaster. Maybe they had no entertainment.
Jump off the boat or take 23. Oh, jumping off the boat.
There was no PlayStations back then, so.
What would you have done?
I don't know.
They have music.
Oh, you could shave funny haircuts into all the animals.
That would have kept me amused. That would have kept
Look,
me amused.
Look, who's this? Who's this? Who's this? And it's just like a terrible haircut. And it's like, nobody gets it. And after about an hour of guessing, so angry, Noah's like, it's fucking Adrian Child. Walks off.
What animal is shaved like Adrian Child?
A llama.
A llama.
Yeah.
Of course it is. John?
He's given him that broccoli hair, though. Nobody knows what's going on.
It doesn't look anything like him. They're just like...
It's like Kirk trying to draw dignity. Like, he's just like... He's not particularly gifted with the Clippers. It wasn't Noah's idea, the game. It was his son's. And you know, it's just one of those things.
But bless Noah, like, he spent all this time worrying about getting all the animals on board, never thought to get Cluedo, like, yeah, or Scrabble.
At least he wasn't Job, you know. Job just gets fucked with.
Just the J-O-B in every sense of the word. Sting and Bubba. Sting was very excited with the scorpion lighting effect being beamed onto the ramp. He was delighted with that.
I'm sure they've been there for weeks.
I thought they'd been there
for weeks. Maybe it was Mean Gene's shit. Maybe he was just like, whoa! Oh. And then, like, the camera caught him and he was like, oh, look at the scorpion!
Tripped over your shit!
While trying to, like, block Mean Gene's shit on the ramp as he's trying to clean it up.
Bubba pops Sting with some right hands, a shoulder block, hot dogs on the bottom rope, and lands a roundhouse kick. He's aces, Big Bubba. The one thing I like about Big Bubba is he was the only man brave enough to hot dog to the crowd on the bottom rope.
The roundhouse, though, I liked it. It's kind of so explosive that it looks a bit janky, but it looks more real for that.
Yes.
I think Sting yanks him, doesn't he? Just as he's about to do it. And so he's falling as he kind of connects with it. And it's like, oh!
He's got great leg extension for a big lad.
He's got great movement, great momentum. I love Boss Man, man.
A lot of love for Bubba. Sting fights back with a bulldog. Bubba's back in soon enough, though. End comes with Bubba going for a superplex. Sting turning it into an inside cradle for the hard-fought victory.
I wasn't really a fan of the finish.
No?
Nah, it just sort of... I got it, but it was just a bit kind of out of nowhere. Just the, whoa, off the top. And hey, hey.
As much as we love Bubba, do you think Sting should have been a little bit more decisive in victory here? Because he's got this triangle match on Sunday.
Possibly, yeah. Because I think Bubba's a big threat, and they've established that Bubba's a threat. Yeah. But Bubba's not exactly like a main event heel threat. So I think if Sting was going to come in against Bubba, obviously don't job him out, but like have Sting get, you know, quite the definitive, let him lock in the Scorpion death lock, because he's been touting that. Yeah. Let him get it in, like, show the crowd some more. Which I get, you know, it's telegraphing, but like, fuck it.
That's all right, it's Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day, nobody's watching, and you're hyping up to this thing that you've been hyping up to for months.
Talking of which, Mean Gene's on the ramp again.
Here we go, but this time he's got a hat.
He's got a hat on now. Somebody's just got back from the dollar store and remembered, shit, it's the Christmas episode.
It must
episode.
Have been just like somebody coming in with a box. Shit, I found it on the back of the wagon. Go, go, go. Throwing wreaths, just like fucking frisbeeing them, sticking tape on them.
The thing is, knowing WCW and the way that it was haphazardly put together sometimes, I can imagine, because this Nitro... it was taped before the live Nitro.
Yeah.
So we're out of order. I can imagine that people started the show thinking, oh, this is the live one, we're taping the Christmas one next. Until somebody went, no, this is the Christmas one now. Oh, shit.
Yeah, because...
oh, I thought we're doing it next. Quick, go get the fucking hats.
Because I'm assuming Bischoff was really kind of in command of the whole thing, given his position in the company. So, like, Bischoff and everybody up at commentary is all festive. But everything, and the thing is, the set dressing doesn't change in the main area.
No.
It's still very much Nitro visually. You just need the indicators, like people wearing hats and stuff. And
yeah. I think it was a bit of an oversight from them. They just had so many other things to think about. They just went, oh, we didn't really think about how we decorate Christmas.
Or it was Sullivan.
Probably Sullivan.
Sullivan,
my son! I want you to steal Christmas!
I want a Beanie Baby!
They're the hottest toy going!
Number three!
They're
going
to be worth millions in 10 years.
I think they might be, you know. I think Alex has got some Beanie Babies. I think she has, actually. Might have to price them up.
Get them evaluated.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's a magical place, we're on our way there, with toys in the millions all under one roof.
It's called Toys R Us.
Soon after bedtime, when dark nighttime falls, Jeffrey and helpers stock up all the shelves.
From ceiling to floor, books, board games and bikes, teddies, puppets and dolls, bats, spaceships and trikes. There's millions, says Jeffrey, all under one roof. It's called Toys R Us.
Lex Luger is chatting to Mean Gene. Jimmy Hart's there as well because we are in a fucking time warp. Lex Luger plans to win the world title, etc., etc. Thank God a slightly different element is added.
It's not the most redundant thing, though, is that every single time they talk to these competitors, it's like, well, are you going to win? Like, what the fuck are you in the match for?
They talk and say nothing.
What are you in the match for?
Yeah.
Like, who is it? Was it Kevin Nash said, like, you know, everybody should come into the wrestling business wanting to be the biggest star and wanting to hold the belt. Mm. Like, if you're not wanting to be a big star, then what are you doing? Like, and you know, not everybody gets to be the big star, but like, why would you enter a match to win a world title if you weren't entirely confident in your abilities?
That should always
to win
be
the world title.
Your
it should always be a
direction.
Unanimous yes. Yeah. And instead, it's just like waffle.
It's just, and I think because Luger says it with so little passion.
Yeah.
Lex Luger talks about winning the world title with the same energy as I talk about having to pop to Tesco to get milk.
He's like a school PE teacher who also teaches, say, the football team.
Yeah.
At the match after school, at the football match between two schools, mugging off to another teacher or some kid who got tripped over by his own team.
That's a great show.
That's how he comes across.
It does. He's like that. He's our boy. But thankfully, we have a slightly different element to this Mean Gene, Lex Luger, Jimmy Hart triangle of terror, as they are interrupted by Sergeant Craig Pittman, Pitbull Pittman. Now, Pittman last week went up to Bobby Heenan and said, well, can you be my manager, please? And Heenan went, no, but here's some numbers. Try them. Thanks. Pittman's come out. He sucks up to Lex Luger a little bit and then says, Jimmy Hart, I want you to manage me. I want to be as successful as him. Hart finds great joy in this because he gets Pittman to take his shirt off and goes, look at your physique and look at Luger's physique.
Rinses poor Pittman.
He tells Pittman to, quote, take a quarter and find a manager that needs a few good men. Pittman, disrespected, emasculated, just leaves.
That is a Christmas tradition, though, isn't it?
Well, to emasculate Pittman.
No, not to emasculate Pittman, but I don't know, as a bigger guy, do you ever get it when you meet family you've not seen in ages, like cousins at Christmas, and they're just like, all right, big man? And it's like, don't fucking call me big man. Like, don't call me big man. I'm aware that I'm a big guy, man. Leave me alone.
I often get, my granddad, I remember once, like, first time I'd seen him all year, and he just went, you put weight on.
Yeah. The blunt generation.
Yeah. Cheers, granddad. Yes.
It wouldn't be Christmas without some body shaving.
Oh, absolutely. That's what Christmas is all about. And then we eat our feelings. So this was a weird...
Oh, that was far too close to the bone.
It's the chicken bone. eat the bone as well, fuck it.
Crunchy.
If I choke, it's probably for the best anyway, granddad.
It can choke me, it can stab me, and if I manage to digest it, I get all of the delicious marrow.
Yeah, then who's the winner? Pittman, man. This made him look shit.
It did, and you know,
he's
Pittman,
not that bad.
They've not been doing anything for Pittman, right?
No.
They're making Pittman look as shit as possible simply because they have, you know, it's not deliberate, I don't think. I think that, well, at least it wasn't. But essentially, you have somebody like Pittman who is, you know, pretty all right. He just needs that bit of polish, maybe a new gimmick, maybe a mouthpiece. And, you know, put him out there. You could maybe do something interesting with him in this time period. But instead, it's kind of like, oh, well, fuck, we've got to plan for this and we've got to promote that and we've got to do this. And shit, what are we going to do with Craig? And it's like, do this thing where he's looking for a manager, then we'll find him a manager. But in the meantime, he's kind of getting passed from pillar to post and he's going to eventually settle probably on a manager who isn't too great, and it or if it is a manager who's previously rebuffed
him. I can spoil that for
him.
You Go. As to who we end up with.
Go.
Teddy Long.
Okay.
But in order to get to Teddy Long,
yeah,
he's been turned down by Bobby Heenan and turned down by Jimmy Hart and then emasculated by Jimmy Hart.
But then what does it do for Teddy Long as well as Craig Pittman there? Because Teddy Long, while he's the nice person who finally goes, yep, I'll be your manager, he's the last in a long line.
Exactly.
So it's
the way you turn this round, and the funny thing is, even as I say it, I know it'll never happen because you've had Pittman just get embarrassed by Hart and Luger. Yeah. Surely you then have Pittman go and find somebody similarly on the back foot as he, and they go, how about you manage me and let's go at it together? And then you have Pittman beat Luger.
Yeah.
Showed you. That should be the end game. Well, but I don't think they interact again.
Jimmy Hart's not one to take any sort of, you know, kind of measure from this episode because ultimately by the end of the episode it's just confusing as fuck anyway.
Yeah, because so, he's back in a bit later on which pushes Pittman down. Weirdly.
Yeah, it's weird, but yeah, it's not great for Pittman here, and he maybe deserves a bit better. Because same with, like, you know, when we had Cobra. And it's just like, why are we doing these G.I. Joe gimmicks, man? Like,
if I had faith that there was an end game, I'd be all right with it. But I have no faith that there's an end game for Pittman. Just a thing to do.
It's just, oh shit, what are we doing next week? Oh shit, what are we doing next week? Put him in there against Mr. JL. Okay, then what are we doing? Put him in a tag. Okay, then what are we doing? And it's
wrestling's not difficult.
The thing is, it's not. But I think at the same time, it's very easy when you're involved with a promotion, like in any form of planning phase and production phase. I can see where people kind of fall through the cracks, which is why people are like, you know, you've got to go up to and bother Vince if you're really wanting to have any change done, because there's so many people that are managing so many things that unless you go direct to source and unless you really flesh out what you want in your head before you do it, and you're ready to answer to any response you're about to face, it's kind of, you just get lost a bit in the shuffle.
Because the ones that do the best in WWE are the ones that go to head office and go, right, here's my idea.
Yeah, not necessarily the most sycophantic either, just like the people who are direct and know what they want and are prepared to go to Vince and go, well, I want this. And Vince goes, well, you can't have that. And he goes, well, what can I have that's on the way to this?
Can I tell you a cool little story about a Vince meeting that we were kind of sort of connected to?
Okay.
Cultaholic.
Go for it.
A Vince McMahon meeting with a WWE star that we were kind of sort of connected to. So, you know Nikki Cross?
Yeah.
So she became Nikki A.S.H. Mm-hmm. That was a character that she pitched to Vince McMahon directly. Yeah. In order to pitch it, she wanted to show Vince what it would look like, to which she got an artist friend of hers to draw her as the superhero.
Was it Rob Downey who
and
did it?
It was Rob Downey who designed our emojis for Twitch. Yeah. And it's the wonderful Rob. I think I've spent about £300 on Rob Downey over the years. He's done Christmas cards.
He's fantastic.
And stuff. He is a great, great artist. Nothing but love to Rob Downey. I thought I'd give him
and
a shout.
And his brother Ian.
Oh, and awesome. Downey as well. He's
I say Ian. I never know. He's explained it to me before. I think it's Ian.
Downey.
I don't know, but either way.
The brothers
apologies.
Downey are phenomenal forces of nature. Thank you. Talking to forces of nature, Dean Malenko.
Oh.
Coming out with that mid-boss snares RPG music that we all love. He is in action against JL.
No longer a mister.
No,
he is JL.
Androgynous. He's JL now. Malenko dominates early with an exploder suplex. JL back into it with a somersault sent on off the ring apron. Nearly clatters his knee on the way down, though.
There is a point, did you notice, where Malenko's technically got JL. They're on like a bridging thing on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And Malenko's got JL pinned for like 4 seconds, but the ref's just looking at it. He's like bridged up and JL's shoulders are just down and it's like, count it. And the ref's just like,
well, it turns out
give up.
They were waiting because they had the bridge in and the ref wasn't doing anything because I guess they were just sort of getting psyched up for what happened next because they come out of the bridge and you blink and you miss it. And JL turns this bridge into a sit-out powerbomb. Yep. Like, that's nice.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I like that a lot.
Who'd have expected it out of two of the most professional talents the company has?
Imagine such a thing. Malenko hits a powerbomb stun gun.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Followed by, I think this is one that gets played a lot on like video packages and stuff for Dean Malenko. Yeah. It's the Avalanche Gutbuster.
Yeah.
So he's on the second rope with him. He holds him up over his shoulders and then brings him down over his knee, but does it off the top rope.
Nice.
Which is a nice... I mean, does it add any extra impact? I guess it does, because obviously the gravity is bringing them down even further.
Momentum as well.
So the momentum pushes them down. He finishes off with a Malenko leg lock for the tap out. Liquid wrestling. Mm-hmm. Excellent match.
And commentary are hyping the leg lock because they're like, I've never seen a move like that before. And oh my God, it was just genius.
They are so gobsmacked by the leg lock after all the stuff that we saw.
They have been really, really doubling down as of late, the last few weeks, in putting over Malenko's genuine, you know, wrestling ability and his knowledge of holds. And this will all obviously boil over in a few years, well, a couple of years. But, you know, they're making it clear that Malenko is a threat. Here.
Yes.
He's not somebody to be taken, you know, lightly because of his size and because maybe he doesn't have the reach of some of the bigger competitors. And that's one thing I like that they did. You know, they focused a lot more on like smaller talent. Smaller. Like the guy's probably still bigger than me. But like, you know, talent that maybe wasn't in the stereotypical mold for the era.
No, not at all. And we'll see more with Dean.
Yeah.
And they'll The thing that
we'll
always
see a lot more is some of the best stuff going.
The thing that always let Dean down, and it will get some of the best stuff going. Mm. You are right, but the charisma.
He's a lot like Lance Storm.
It's a tough nut to crack. Some come very close, and both the WWF and WCW come very close to getting him over there without necessarily having the charisma.
The private eye gimmick, not private eye, the secret agent gimmick's a bit Bond weird. Gimmick. But
like the Lothario Di Malenko.
Dean Lothario. It's kind of similar to Lance Storm where it's like, oh, he's just very dry. And it's but you can use that to your advantage and you can always, you know, give him a mouthpiece if you feel it's necessary. But it's very much like Benoit. Like the reason I used to like Benoit so much as a kid, like my favorite wrestler by the time, you know, I was about, what, like 11, 12, 13, like loved watching his matches simply because he was... not like everybody else. Like he was focused on the in-ring stuff. He was really aggressive in pursuing, you know, his victory in each match. And he didn't need to talk. He didn't like, his work did all the talking. And I think if they double down on something like that for Malenko, kind of, or made it a bit more comedic, like Lance Storm uses dryness as a power rather than something to be kind of looked down on, then they could have done a lot more with him. But at the same time, his work speaks for itself to a point where even though the company didn't really, you know, initially anyway, they do feature him, but it's like even though the company didn't ever really fully pull the trigger on the Radicals, like nobody can deny their work.
No, not at all.
It's incredible.
Mean Gene is chatting on the ramp once again. Yay, that's what I wanted.
He's
for Christmas
back.
He's chatting to Ric Flair now
because Ric Flair's in the main event tonight. Happy Christmas, everybody. What a present.
It is actually a nice present. Flair is interrupted. Flair gets interrupted by Jimmy Hart, who about 5 minutes ago really shouted down Craig Pittman for groveling to him. Jimmy Hart is now groveling to Ric Flair.
Jimmy Hart, manager of Lex Luger, who is pursuing the world title, is groveling to Ric Flair on the ramp.
Deeply apologetic towards Flair for the Dungeon of Doom's shenanigans last week.
And like a Lannister, he says he'll always pay his debts because he's Jimmy Hart, by God.
And he says he'd like to walk down to the ramp with Flair for the title match and be in his corner for the main event. Flair says, if you want to be ringside when I beat Randy Savage, make yourself happy and start putting the party together.
Yeah, and Jimmy's like, yeah, you're going to win. You're going to be champion tonight. And it's like, if I'm Luger, I'm like, I know this is probably a nefarious plan, but
I hope Luger's
I'd be at least there at ringside.
Can I come as well?
Jimmy, you're not just leaving me here and pissing off with Rick when he wins the belt, are you?
You can't leave.
No, I'd never do that.
You can't leave. I don't know what to do. And you go. Jimmy Hart leaves the room and Lex Luger just thumping a coffee maker. How does this do?
As is Christmas tradition, Jimmy Hart just looks him in the eye and he's like, don't you worry, Lex. I'm just going for a pack of smokes and some milk. I'll be back soon.
Oh, stop it.
Everyone. Kisses him on the forehead, tucks him into bed, and he's like, be a good lad. You look after your ma. And he walks out.
Off he goes.
He goes swanning about with that harlot, Ric Flair.
I was going to say, what we don't know is that the dad in this is a bee.
That same bee, all grown up.
We taped the end of the Christmas bee earlier on, and this is the star in true Nitro style.
He's like, I love you, son. You're amazing. After you left the hive, everybody joked. Everybody said he's never going to make
it. Everybody said you were shit.
He doesn't have any passion for the wrestling business, they said. But you slammed Yokozuna and you got that bus you never rode in. I believe in you.
Thank you, Dad. They said you weren't fit to live with pigs, and I said you were.
And then he leaves anyway. Oh, God, horrible.
A Tim Burton Christmas from Sound
No, he Driver. Returns. He doesn't leave. We can't end it on that down note.
No, but he does, because we tell the we did the bit.
Okay,
the
oh, yeah, shit. Yeah, no, he left.
It's
left.
Definitely not a hallucination.
And Lex is just lying there having sweet dreams backstage. You know, he's going to be really sad when he wakes up.
Lex Luger.
For a moment, anyway, before he realises. But, you know, he's going to be sad.
What if like, Lex Luger and the Bee have swapped brains, like, in The Fly?
Oh, could you
that Lex might Luger explain why Luger can't do anything.
Trying to just sit on people to sting them the entire match. He's just like, get down. And he's just constantly trying to like
ass drop.
Get
that
them.
Pollen off of Lex Luger.
Just rubbing himself all over people. You're not pollen. Throwing them out. Fuck. So anyway, yes, absentee bee father right. Jimmy Hart is at ringside.
Now, you're a historian of this sort of ilk.
Yeah.
Did Flair ever have Jimmy Hart as a manager before this moment?
I don't know, you know.
I don't think so. I don't think we've
I'm
ever
sure they,
seen
they address that directly on commentary, don't they?
I know they talk about like how weird it is seeing Jimmy Hart and Flair, but I don't know whether they directly say they've never.
Well, Jimmy was in what, WWF for a very long time.
There would have been a crossover.
There would have been a crossover, but it depended if Jimmy would have been working face or heel, I guess.
And then when Hogan came into WCW,
because Flair don't need a manager. That's the thing. Flair's never needed a manager.
He had Heenan.
But I mean, like in the respect of like Flair can talk, Flair can do X, Y, Z. Heenan Mr. was
Perfect.
Necessary in that situation, I think. But I don't think Flair back in the day. Was there a reason for him to have a manager when he was on like top of the world?
I quite liked the when he was in WWF in 92. He can, but I quite liked in WWF when he had like that sort of like entourage of Bobby Heenan and Mr. Perfect.
It fits with him very well simply because he is, you know, in gimmick, Ric Flair is so extra that why wouldn't he? I mean, look at the Horseman. The Horseman's the most extra stable of all time. Not a single one of them needed to be in a stable.
No.
But there they are. And it's like, oh shit, they are like the Violent Beatles. This is amazing.
And that's it. And the Violent Beatles, that's brilliant. And Flair in WWF getting like the manager of champions.
Yeah.
And then
that's
the
an
best
immediate,
technical
like,
wrestler boom, boom, on boom. His books.
Yeah.
To go, right, you can tell me, you can work all the business side of it. You can get me up to speed with
and
who's
keep
who.
Keep everybody and away from me and I'm just going to focus on holding the belt. And I think it works in that respect, but thinking back to like young Flair, I don't know. I don't know if him and Hart ever.
They're
did
a bit
that.
Oil and water, so I get why they wouldn't do. They're a bit oil and water.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was an interesting thing. Savage comes out as the WCW champ early on. Savage reverses a figure four, and part of the story, the first part of this match, is that Savage he's fucking cracked the code of the figure four.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Flair goes to put it on, he's reversing it, he's turning it into a pin, ducking out of it.
Even when Flair locks it in, Randy's able to leverage by slightly turning just enough to the point where you see Flair's fingers start to like shake and he's trying to get the ropes and stuff. He's still able to get his breaks, but you're watching the fact that Flair's having to deal with the idea that Savage now knows a way around his secret weapon. And, you know, the finisher's supposed to be your specialty, not anybody else's.
I love that story. It's a good story. Flair, once he gets back in charge, well, basically, Savage goes to get a steel chair at one point, and the referee says, no, you can't. And that gives Flair the opening to bring his arm down over the top rope, and Flair goes for the arm. The injured arm that isn't injured, according to Dave Meltzer.
Lest we not fucking forget the injured arm. It's only been injured for, what, 5 months?
And it's not injured, remember? The dirt sheets are wrong. We're stuck in a time warp in WCW.
I've just remembered the fucking... he's holding up a copy of The Torch, is it? Or is it just the Observer?
No, the Observer.
Oh, my
Observe
God.
Observe this, brother. Because he's not injured. except he's really fucking injured. So he works over the arm for a bit. He then works over the leg, and Flair will eventually get the figure four on. Yes. But like you say, even when it's on, he's able to kind of cajole it to a point even, where he like, takes the pressure off.
Randy's in a lot of pain selling it, but even then, in his pain, as he's writhing, he's slowly kind of trying to rock in one direction more than the other, showing that, oh God, he knows the way out, he knows the way around it.
He knows my secrets. We see, eventually, Savage comes back to life. He gets a chop that wakes him up, and he starts on the offense.
Really? As you do. Just, wake up. I'm back, brother.
He then starts fighting. There's a really fun bit where Flair puts a sleeper hold suddenly on Savage. Savage drives Flair's head into the buckle. Savage collapses. Flair's upright for a bit, and then Flair just does and goes down. It's a really just a fun bit where just both men just are dead.
One of the most cartoony Flair flops I think I've ever seen, because you see him actively like walking backwards fine, and then he just goes, huh? Proper milks it.
The true art of a flare flop is just committing to it.
Yeah.
Committing to the bit, and also having to fight those survival instincts of your body to put your hands up to stop yourself.
Kyle O'Reilly collapsing out of the ring. Just like that kind of where it's like, just gone. Like, I love that sort
it's
of stuff.
Fighting your instincts to stop yourself and putting your hands up to stop yourself.
to protect yourself. You eat that dirt, Tom.
Yeah, you have
you
to
You take
eat
that
the
hard
dirt.
Arena floor. Them's are your dues and you're going to pay them.
Okay, Savage back into this. Jimmy Hart grabs Savage's leg to try and stop him. He gets popped in the face for his trouble. This brings out Lex fucking Luger, who attacks Savage. DQ! What's the point in anything?
It's
in
just,
this company.
It's
nothing sacred.
No, and then it carries on. The fight continues. We have a bit of a breakdown, and then all of a sudden, it's just Sting and Savage in the ring. They bump into each other back to back, and then they look at each other, and then they're kind of going and screaming at each other and having a bit of a tussle. And then that's all the time we've got, folks. See you all next week. Merry Christmas.
Bischoff signing off once again, going, what's the relationship with Sting and Lex? Right.
It's been the same they just bookend the script with the same start and end, it feels. And the same like time slots for interviews. These past few weeks, especially, it's felt like the exact same punctuation of the running order just fill in the blanks a little bit differently. So this week, you know, instead of Bagwell, you had Riggs. And then you had, and it's like Mean Gene's going to be talking to Sting on the ramp again, but this time a slightly different thing about this. And then this time Pittman's going to come out here. And it's, just
proper copy-paste.
One thing I did like about the main event, though, was, did you know Savage spat in Flair's face?
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's a bit spit
brutal.
As
is tradition.
Christmas tradition.
Yeah.
Is that a Christmas tradition you'll have?
No, it's just it's a standard tradition. They have a travelator backstage, and everybody just, you know, when you arrive, you kind of stand at the bottom of it. Everybody goes on like handshakes. It's not. It's just you get on the travelator with all your luggage and it's like, as you're like getting past, hello, how you doing?
It's tricky to do now, like, you know, post-COVID.
But you've got to have a shield and somebody's got to keep going along and wiping it. But fortunately, it's a travelator, so they just get one big bit of cloth, spray it down, and just stand
have
like
one
that.
Person at the back of the travelator.
Like, big squeegee, just like... And they're getting moved along. All you got to do is stand there like that.
I can't wait for the Sam Driver holiday special.
Yeah, you don't want that.
It's just going to be the... I want to drop some acid and then watch it. That's what I'm looking forward to. That was Nitro for Christmas. Yeah. Merry Christmas, everybody. Very copy-paste from last week.
Yeah.
I felt like they needed to get over the line for Christmas.
I was amazed we didn't have like some form of Dungeon of Doom Christmas, like some sort of pre-recorded Christmas like backstage promo packages or segments.
So much fun if they
just
did.
Simply because, you know, they can tape all that stuff beforehand. They've just got to get the set decoration for like the little corner, put the tree up or whatever, and do a bit of that. But then again, was it really done much back then? Like, I seem to remember Raw would have bunting up sometimes around Christmas when it was in the Manhattan Center, or I might be misremembering completely.
I think the WWF leaned into sort of specials far better than WCW.
Oh God, yeah, but I mean,
because next week for Monday Night Raw, it's the Raw Bowl.
Yeah,
where they have like it's like an NFL themed show where they've got a brass band.
But
and
you forget
ring
that was
dressing
that
and...
was Vince's specialty, man. Like the without the Brawl to End It All, like there's no There's no WrestleMania. There's none of that. So the brought to end it all was, you know, the MTV one, and that really showed Vince the power of what specials can do, especially when you kind of tie it in just right. You market it just enough. Maybe the Super Bowl edition's not going to do gangbusters, but fuck, at least you themed it.
Yeah,
and it makes it feel special, and it makes it feel a bit more relatable to an outside sport that maybe people who are fans of that sport would be like, wrestling. Pff, it's all fake. But you do have a crossover in your audience that are like, oh, I like football and I like wrestling. So putting the two together, just it's a bit endearing, isn't it? It's a bit like, oh, well, they like football too. See, we've got our own Super Bowl type thing going off. We're just as excited as you are for the game.
I think there's something to having a festive special.
Yeah.
Just leaning into it. And WWE
I would love nothing more than to do a Cultaholic Christmas special one day with a live musical.
We did a Caneless Carol.
I mean like an actual studio Christmas special with a live musical guest.
Oh.
And like all that sort of shit. I'd love to do that.
Oh, that's a love. I really like that as an idea.
Oh, you've clicked studio mode.
Oh, that's why. There we go. Did an accidental click.
But yeah.
This show has not been an accidental click. We are back next week for a watch-along of Starrcade 1996.
That's right.
Are we doing pizza and beer for this one? Because we missed out pizza and beer on the last one, I believe.
Yeah, maybe.
Should we do pizza and beer?
Okay. Yeah, why not?
I'm up for pizza and beer for Starrcade 96. Why not? Alex referred to me going to work today as have fun at the ice cream factory.
Nice.
I'm like, fairly accurate.
Yeah.
Fairly accurate. We'll be back for Starrcade. What are you working on this week? Anything exciting?
Stuff I can't talk about.
Oh!
Yeah, that's right.
Top secret stuff.
Top secret projects, everybody.
Look out for some WWE Newcastle video flavored shenanigans in a bit. In the meanwhile, whet your whistle for WWE Newcastle, which is tonight. I had a lovely chat with Gunter yesterday, and you can listen to that on the podcast feed.
Yeah, how's he doing?
He's all right. He's doing all right, is Gunter. We talk about whether or not Vince McMahon has asked him to get any chops yet. We talk about how he would beat Tyson Fury in a fight. We bring up Fabian Aichner.
Ooh.
Rather, he brings up Fabian Aichner. We talk about all that.
Nice.
That's on the YouTube channel and the podcast feed. And until we're next back together, he is at... Are you the Sam Driver now? You are,
the
aren't
Sam
you?
Driver,
he is at the Sam Driver on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter too.
I never pronounce it the, because it just feels like it's being written like...
The!
Yeah, it feels a bit... It's only because I couldn't get my name. So it's just the Sam Driver.
Okay. He is at the Sam Driver. I am at just humble, modest Tom Campbell. Together, we are
fuck
at
you,
cult...
my name was taken, right?
We are at Cult Aholic on Twitter.
I'm going.
Have a lovely Christmas, Tim Burton! Everyone! Bees.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.